I already started recording. This is Microdoses, and I have Maria Camacho here with me. And it's fun to have a live audience. And we were just, you can talk if you want.
I'm excited to be here. That's what it is.
We were just walking down to the pond past all of the fireflies. I remember a few months ago fantasizing about seeing fireflies, like a whole symphony of fireflies. Mm. And tonight we just did. And we walked down past the fireflies to the pond and listened to all of the different frogs sing. And now we're back here. And I'm hoping to speak to you, speak to us, this microdose that I actually recorded yesterday. And then one of my children asked to use my phone to sing some songs, but he's really shy about singing songs. And so he goes around the corner of the house and he has to record them in private. And then he often deletes them. And I say, you should keep those ideas. But anyway, that's his process. And so what I learned was not only did he delete some of his own songs, but he also deleted my song.
That symphony.
Right. Yeah, for which he, apologized for. So, but you know, it's funny because when I was speaking it yesterday, I was feeling like, did I do it justice? And I was feeling insecure about how I talked about this topic. Mm-hmm. And so maybe this is, I mean, not maybe, this is absolutely perfect. And the topic is empathy. And I think many of us, but I'll speak for myself, have been given this a lot of thought and feeling recently. I've been giving this a lot of feeling. And on Monday, I was invited to be part of this extraordinary group of, I call it the Mother Force, mm. after my teacher Paramatma, who said we need a Mother Force in the world. Mm. But the group is a group of leaders and mothers, each one from different places, spaces, races, and we came together to talk about the future and the present and how to be together vulnerably, how to talk about and proactively create spaces for anti-racist dialogue and action. And even now as I'm speaking, I'm like, oh, what's the best way to say this? You know, which is, you know, I'm aware of that in myself. I'm like, how do I find the right words? How do I really share how I feel? And how do I do it in a way that is attuned and gracious and humble and strong? And that's exactly what the conversation was about on Monday through every, you know, different person. And one thing that we started talking about was the power of storytelling and the power of direct storytelling from one's own experience and the way of, you know, basically answering the question, what's it like to be you? Mm. You know? And so some of the women in the group were telling very powerful stories. And it got me thinking about this, what's it like to be you idea. And I thought of my old and dear mentor from Cambridge Hospital, Harvard, Alfred Margulies, Dr. Margulies, who wrote this amazing book called The Empathic Imagination. And not only was he a brilliant listener full of empathic imagination, which I'll go into in a moment, but he had this way of doing what I feel a lot of amazing leaders do, which is to absolutely be solid and grounded in the unknown, you know, and not be imposing his own ideas and assumptions, but just listening to the person. The interviews were were just like these extraordinary dances that were totally emergent. And so in the beginning of his book, he talks about where we got the word empathy from. And it turns out, I love that Maria's, by the way, drawing with this big, fat, green, felt-tipped Crayola marker. And I love it. It's like a whole flow chart going on.
Yes, because I must say, I feel like this is the school that I would have wanted. Like, I'm taking notes, but it doesn't feel like I'm taking notes by school, but like out of pleasure.
Thank you. And I love taking notes, too. I love it. I take notes out of excitement also.
Out of excitement.
And like it's just this riff that's happening between my hands and my heart and my ears and the person. And, yeah.
And I wish the knowledge that was imparted in me when I had to take notes, but rather I was probably studying something a little bit more boring than this. Good.
But I just had to comment on this beautiful extravaganza going on over here. So there's diagrams. Yeah. Anyway, there's curves. There's underlines, there's caps, there's like when you go over a word like 5 times, whatever that's called.
Really bold.
Yeah, yeah. So he was talking about this word, and it turns out that it was translated by a husband and wife, James and Alex Strakey, were looking to... Well, they were assigned the job of translating Freud's works from German into English. And so they got to this word, Einfühlung. I looked up how to pronounce it, so I hope you're impressed. I'm still not doing a great job. Einfühlung. And Einfühlung posed this problem because... You know, what they found was this word empathy, but Alex, the wife, wrote a letter to her husband and was saying, basically, I'll quote a little of it from her letter. She said, "In any case, it's a vile word," meaning empathy, "for a subtle process. I can't help feeling a real English writer would at once produce the right word. The process must have a name." So she wasn't satisfied. She felt that empathy lacked what Einfühlung had. And what Einfühlung literally means is in feeling, in hyphen feeling, or feeling into, which is a more literal translation and closer to this subtle process, right? And Almargulis in the book goes on to say that, "Moreover, the very difficulty in translation itself lent Einfühlung an air of mystery, conveying its delicate shadings and nuances. Perhaps she feared that in naming the process, we would concretize and violate it, pretending we understood." And so I love thinking about empathy as this... Well, first of all, I love his suggestion, basically, which is, do we need a new word for empathy that defines a more subtler, nuanced process of feeling into? And what would that look like? And would it even be a word? Or is it a hand signal? Or is it a hologram? You know, I mean, is a whole new kind of glyph or code. But I mean, a word or phrase feels important in that sense. And then he goes on to talk about what he calls imaginative empathy, which I think is his way of describing, well, really one of the things I really saw and soaked into that he did and what I think he's describing. And he talks about two kinds of empathy, resonant empathy and imaginative empathy, one being sort of more passive and the other more of an effort and an active process. So this is what he says. And thank you, Almargulis, for teaching me. He was really one of my greatest, most amazing mind, body, spirit teachers. And I tear up just thinking about him.
And I want to thank Meg for remembering so vividly his teachings. And now she gets to share it with us.
Yeah. So
thank you.
Well, he lived them, you know, he was them.
Did you meet him?
He was one of my teachers. Yeah. He taught me for years how to interview patients and be with... He taught me how to be with people and really listen. Mm. And he was a poet in the airwaves, in a field between two, you know, in relationship. you know, he really was, is. So he says this. He said, we might also conceptually divide empathy into passive and active modes. Resonant empathy and imaginative empathy can be contrasted. The word resonance derives from the Latin word resonare or resound. Like an echo, resound owes its existence to the other. Mm. Plucking one string of an instrument creates resonant vibrations in a second. Imaginative empathy, on the other hand, stresses the active, searching quality of entering the other's world. Imagination constructs a new world, one not immediately accessible to the observer. Carl Rogers, who is also a person that was a psychologist, emphasized the passive and resonant component, the therapist as a pane of glass. Martin Buber, a more active existential worker, exhorted a bold swinging, demanding the most intensive stirring of one's being into the life of the other. One is to, quote, imagine the real, end quote, of the other, to gain a sense of, quote, the particular real person who confronts me in his wholeness, unity, and uniqueness. End Buber quote. Well, I could keep reading, but I will stop there and just say that there's something about how Martin Buber is putting that, the most intensive stirring of one's being into the life of the other. Mm. And then this idea of the real person, you know, and the imaginative, it's both, right? It's both this vast listening with nothing particular in mind and employing the imagination to really feel into. And there's so much more I want to say on the imagination in another microdose at some point soon. But I love this call for a new description and a new feeling into of what we mean by empathy and what this time and space and moment is really calling for. And I think what is always being called for. So for today's experience, I would like you to take a moment to close your eyes and just invite in, allow someone to appear before you that maybe there's a gap in understanding between you, or maybe you don't feel this person gets you, but it's somebody that you care about. And when you have that person in mind, you can go ahead and open your eyes. And I would like for you to call this person and let them know this is an exercise and it will last 3 minutes. And you can ask them this simple question. And then you can just listen for the next 3 minutes. And just say thank you at the end. You can let them know that that's the process so that you don't have to say anything in return if you don't want to, and they don't either. But the question is, what's it like to be you? What's it like to be you? And you can let them know that the assignment is just to ask and hold space and listen and thank them. And that's it. And I suggest that you do it right now in the flow. And just add 3 minutes to this moment. Lots of love and thank you. Good night.
Good night, everybody. I am going to do this exercise in the next couple of minutes. Thank you, Meg.
Thank you. Thanks, Maria. Bye.
Bye.
I'm glad I had to redo it.
Yes, so am I.
Yeah.